on the first and third Sundays of the month at 7 p.m. UK time. Simon actively encourages you to join the conversation by using the Ask Question menu link at the top of the page at wowwowwow.wolfspiritradio.com/listen. Please come early to ask your questions. Now, on with the show. The next 2 hours will be full of debate, interview guests and up-to-date news. Please join Simon and play an active role. Connecting Consciousness Show. You're listening to Wolf Spirit Radio. Oh, yes, indeed. You're listening to Wolf Spirit Radio. It is the 4th of June, 2017, 7 p.m. British time. And here is your host, Simon Parks. Hello, Simon.
Hello, JP. Hello to everybody. Lovely sunny day here today.
Oh, lucky you. It's been a bit damp.
Well, you're in Scotland.
Yeah, well, it's always raining here. So, how has your week been? Are you feeling better? We all want to know how you're feeling first.
Oh, that's kind of you to ask. The cold is nearly all gone. I think, was it 2 weeks ago, wasn't it, where I did my radio show and it was debatable whether I was going to do the 1 hour or the 2 hour, but I decided that I would stick it out and do the 2 hours and I was taking breaks every so often to cough and splatter. So that's just a cold virus and it's run its course. Went to the hospital, for the tummy problem and, what they wanted to do was put a camera down my throat and I couldn't really keep still. So that wasn't very successful. So they've said I'm going to have an X-ray instead, to which point I thought, why in goodness name didn't you offer me the X-ray to start with? but the medicine they've given me has made a great improvement. So that's really good news. So I'm a lot better than when I was last on the show 2 weeks ago.
Oh, that's good. You're sounding a lot stronger. And so you're able to travel around and do gigs and stuff again?
Yes. as long as I don't overdo it, then the answer is yes, absolutely. No problem. Right. I want to obviously crack on. We all know what the major topic's going to be, unless anybody's been like Rumpelstiltskin, whoever it was, who hibernated for 100 years. It was funny, actually. One person said to me, maybe this attack was a real terrorist attack because it was so low tech. All the attacks are terrorist attacks, but I know what this person meant. They meant like who was behind it. But I have posted on my website some rather interesting information, which rather suggests that, as I said on the website, it's not just a ragtag bunch of fundamentalists who want to cause as much trouble as possible. I'm sure those are the people that actually carry out the attacks. But my interest actually is who is behind them, who is organizing them, who is funding them. So first of all, on a wider point, I've been hammering home on my website as much as I can, because I know that the security services monitor, you know, my website, as indeed they do many other people's. And I've been saying that there had to be a complete change in the way that the intelligence services attempt to monitor these sort of attacks. Up until sort of the back end of last year, what they would do is, and GCHQ, the eavesdropping spy system in Great Britain, would pick up texts, emails, Skypes, Twitters, Facebook, anything. And that's how these guys were communicating with each other. And then suddenly, in the back end of last year, there was no evidence at all. There's been no emails, no Skypes, nothing. These attacks are being orchestrated in the same way attacks were organized before the advent of the internet and before mobile phones, before cell phones. And so what I've been saying on my website was that what the security services need to do was to get back to the old-fashioned form of policing, and that monies needed to be moved from satellites and hacking into digital networks and all the rest of it. And, you know, boots on the ground. You know, you need men and women to infiltrate organizations and to do the job that we expect them to do. And interestingly enough, Theresa May actually said that in her own words today, on the speech on the doorstep of number 10, where she said that things had not worked out. Things had to be different. And I'm hopeful that that message has got across. All right. Now, why do I not think that this attack that took place recently in Borough and London Bridge in South London is just the work of a few odd, crazy, evil people? The fact is that they are all that, but they are orchestrated by something else. And the reason for that is that the attack took place at 2200 hours British time, and 7 people were killed. Now, oddly enough, the terrible attack in Manchester, we're told that the suicide bomber was 22 years old. What I've also worked out is that the attack took place on the 3rd of June. So June is the 6th month. So the 3rd of the 6th month, 3 sixes are 666. So we can immediately discern that this is a satanic a special number, a satanic date attack. Now, it is doubtful to me that a bunch of radical Muslims who believe in Allah would work on such a premise. They just wouldn't do it. So it tells me that there's Europeans or at least non-Muslim people behind them. So that's the first thing I wanted people to take note of. The second thing I want them to take note of is that the speech that the British Prime Minister Theresa May gave on the doorstep of number 10, where she basically said enough is enough. Who is she saying enough is enough to? If you said to a bunch of terrorists enough is enough, that actually wouldn't have any effect at all. But if it's an elite organization, maybe what you're saying is, look, you know, you've made your point. I hear your message. I'll do what you want. Enough is enough. That's how I'm taking it. Also, if you look at what she was wearing around her neck, she had a black and white necklace that looked just like a chain. And I made the comment that that reminded me in the tarot card set of the devil card, where the devil stands between Adam and Eve, and Adam and Eve wear a collar, a chains around their neck, but they could easily take them off. And I rather think that when Theresa May was talking about how she's going to crack down on the internet, it isn't just going to be what we would call radical sites. I think there's a real potential here for the elite to begin to curtail any internet chatter that challenges the establishment. And I think that the chain around her neck is a symbol of attempting to put humanity into chains. Now, that's not people who listen to me know that I'm not a scaremonger. I'm not a fearmonger, because that's not positive. But we do need to be alerted and warned. And I think that from other information that I've received, that there is a real drive to use these attacks as an excuse to start dismantling anti-establishment chatter on the web. Now, if that's about how to make a bomb, I've got no problem with that. Take down every site that says how to make a bomb. But if it's, say, this radio show or any other radio show that seeks to bring the truth out, then we have a real problem. So that's something that we need to be worked on. All right. I'm sure more information will come from that, but that's all I want to say so far on that. I've got a lot to get through tonight. Chemtrails. It's almost worth doing a fortnightly update on chemtrails. People are sending me their pictures. Thank you very much. Keep them coming. Why it's so important, and it's the main reason why Donald Trump has pulled out of the supposed climate change group. People who may not have caught the mainstream news, Donald Trump has removed the United States from signing the protocol, which is about carbon emissions. And in fact, Donald Trump has called global warming a load of nonsense. He's actually right in the sense that global warming is not the heating of the atmosphere through carbon dioxide and gases. It's because the sun, our star, is increasing its vibrational rate in terms of the light that it bathes all the planets in the solar system with, and that's why all the planets in the solar system are heating up. It's got nothing to do with gases. It's to do with what we call the shift or the event. In order to raise the vibration of the planet and the human race, it is the star. Each solar system should have a star. In fact, it should have a binary, two stars. But that raising of the vibration is due to the star, the sun. So the best way for the elite to prevent humanity evolving is to start spraying a different type of material into the atmosphere, which they hope will reflect this higher bandwidth of light. The human eye, as wonderful as it is, only sees a very small proportion of light. We call it visible light. Things like gamma rays and X-rays, they're light, but our eyes don't see them. But nevertheless, they come under the banner of light. So we're now talking about some rays that the sun is emitting that we cannot see, but are affecting our physical bodies and every living thing, including the planet itself. Now, if the elite can spray this stuff into the sky, which they're doing, they can't stop it, but they can slow down the development. And that's what all these chemtrails are about at the moment. That's why so many people in so many countries are reporting them. And so many people who've never seen a chemtrail in their part of the world are suddenly seeing them, because what the elite are trying to do is to ensure there's a blanket around the Earth. They don't want holes where the energy can come through easily. So the whole point about this from the elite's perspective is to reflect back the higher vibrational energy from the sun to slow up human development on the planet. So that's very important, and it's one of the key battles that's being fought. So that's done. And that's why Trump is saying he's not going to be involved in the climate change, because it's all a load of nonsense, which it is. It's just used as an excuse to get the public behind the idea of global warming. They don't want the public to understand that the true sense of global warming is their salvation. It is their freedom. And they want to just say it's a chemical thing. It's a pollution thing. All right, let's go on. There is a very small group of elite people. I mean, really small, who are above the Rothschilds. And I know that's going to seem quite odd to a number of people, but there are a very small group of people who are even higher than the Rockefellers and the Rothschilds, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. They're sometimes being called the parents. It's a term that we don't hear very often. Maybe only just one or two people have used it. I myself haven't heard the term, but I have a different name for them. The name I have for them is guardians. But when we look at the facts and the information that we know about them, they're one and the same. And these are individuals who have an incredibly long lifespan compared to humans, and were tasked with maintaining the status quo on the planet, and have literally left the planet. Not all of them, but many of them have chosen to self-terminate, as I say. Suicide is another word. Because they feel that they are now in a position to escape the trap of the energy web around the planet. So these are creatures, I won't call them anything else other than creatures, who are leaving or wish to leave simply because they know that the time is up, the game's over with. However, there are three left that I'm aware of. And these creatures are connected very much to a magical satanic culture. There are covens, which are feminine dominated in their operation, but masculine over controlled. And each of the guardians or parents is the head of a section or a quadrant of land or individuals which contains a coven. So it's very satanic, and it works very, very strongly. The word Pindar comes in quite a lot. And the word Pindar is a title, just as Anu, the name Anu, is actually a title, just as King Arthur was a symbol of rank rather than a name. And so we have some very big divisions taking place at the top rank of the satanic field. what we're looking at is the middle ranking organization beginning to try to run itself to make its own decisions because the very top echelon has imploded. And that's good and it's bad. It's good because then the control system is faltering. It's bad in a way because these individuals left to run amok, some are creating more problems. And a lot of the terrorist attacks we're seeing at the moment are related to the fact that a number of middle-ranking or upper-middle-ranking satanic controllers have been given carte blanche to do what they want. So why at the moment are there being no attacks in America? It's because President Trump is neither a Republican nor a Democrat, is a billionaire and cannot be blackmailed or swayed. The British Prime Minister is an established politician of an established party, and pressure can be brought to bear on established politicians. But somebody who is independent can't be manipulated like that. That's why we're not seeing attacks in America. That's why we're seeing them here in Britain. Now, does that mean that America's free of attacks? No, it doesn't. There are going to be some attacks. But at the moment, the pressure is on those established politicians who can either be blackmailed or controlled. Right, I'll move on. Let's talk about CERN. The elite believe, this is the three remaining, parents or guardians, that they have stretched the timeline enough. At the last radio show, I think, although I wasn't very well, I tried to get the point across that time is like a piece of elastic. If you take a measuring stick, calibrated from 1 to 12, ruler, foot, 12 inches, 30 centimeters, and you put this piece of rubber and you mark off the increments, and then you stretch it to twice the length of the 12-inch ruler, you have the same matter, the same mass, the same material, but it's been stretched thinner. So your journey down this piece of plastic or rubber is longer. But there comes a limit. You can't stretch beyond that. But what the elite feel they've done is they've stretched it enough to buy them more time. At the Bilderberger Group, the chief executive of CERN was invited, and he's been tasked with building a new collider, a new Hadron collider, circular collider in Switzerland, which will be three times the size of the original CERN, and up to seven times the amount of power. At that meeting, I understand, terms such as stairway to heaven, I'll say that again, stairway to heaven were used. Also references to the biblical, the Tower of Babel. So it would appear that the elite think that they've a chance by stretching time to build another collider, which would take a long time. So they really think they've stretched time quite successfully, but to open another portal into the fourth dimension. So connecting consciousness, a while back now, prevented the CERN Hadron Collider from doing exactly that. We prevented, that's people all over the world who were members of Connecting Consciousness and those who weren't, who joined in that group meditation, prevented CERN from effectively opening a portal into the fourth dimension. What these guys are trying to do is have another crack at it, but the CERN itself isn't capable of doing that. No, people keep writing to me about CERN. Forget it. Forget it. And if you won't believe me, believe what the elite are telling you. The elite are saying we need to build another Hadron Collider, seven times more powerful than the first one, because they know what I know. What I've been saying is that CERN is incapable of doing anything now because Connecting Consciousness prevented that device from working. So they're going to try and build a new one, and I believe now that it's just coming into the establishment news, so you might find some info on that. And no doubt, Connecting Consciousness will have to step up to the plate when the time is right and deal with that as well. So that is why the head of CERN was invited to the Bilderberger Group, because they wish to open a portal. That's why these parents or guardians are desperate, because when you open a portal into the fourth dimension, not only do you receive resources, reinforcements, but you can get the heck out of there. So those who wanted to leave can't go. That's why we took the CERN down. People can't escape judgment. They have to face judgment here. I think that'll probably do for now. So difficult times, but by no means are we scared or frightened. But we need to be aware that manipulation is still taking place. And I know lots of our listeners don't listen to the established news, but sometimes it's worth just listening, as a friend of mine said, just to see what they're peddling, what they're pushing. So that'll do, JP. That's the situation at the moment. So thank you.
Well, it's a bit of choppy seas today. I have to say, I would love to have been listening to what you were saying just now, but I've been focusing on, trying to make nobody in the chat room can get any sound, and I've got five servers running, and they're all none of them, and then people are calling into the studio number, and that's even more disturbing. So
what's causing that then? Is that just what's causing that?
Right. Okay. So well, there's several layers of this, and a few weeks ago it started. Is that there's some seems to be some sort of how can I put this? It's like a facade that goes up that is a copy of what is on the page. It's called a cache, and somewhere in the world, Wall Spirit Radio's page is being cached, and then the information behind it that has the correct radio servers is not available to the people. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So it's like somebody's in the way of Wall Spirit, and anytime I make a change to the station page, it doesn't get changed. And people can't see it. So, I'm working away trying to get things going. And nothing works because it's behind this wall.
So is it worth carrying on tonight then?
Oh, absolutely. There are several pages that are working, several other radio sites that are working, and you can hear this on, obviously, if you're already listening, but people can tune into everbeyondradio.com. You can also go to Wolf Spirit Studio B. The link is in the top of the page of Wolf Spirit Radio's chat line. So look, let's move on. The YouTube will be posted. I've got the recordings running. Your sound is absolutely wall to wall, crystal clear. So let's just take an advantage. And if anybody can't hear it, well, see if you can hear it. Help somebody else in the chat room. You know, get on with it, so that I can work with Simon here.
They on YouTube, can't they? If they can't hear it,
yeah, it'll be on YouTube within hours. I've got it set up. So, let us begin, shall we? Let me refresh this page, and this will give me freshest question. And I'm going to go back to the beginning of today and ask the first question, and so forth. So, okay. So, here's the one that came in, Savarini. Two questions. Oh, I know that my grandfather's has been raped by a priest when he was a boy, and by my research I find that can curse the next generation. I have sadly do a ritual of commitment of Enki, find on the evil website loveenki.com, and I fear cursing myself and my family. Do you know something about this website, and can I escape from all this? Thanks for all.
Right, I don't know about the website at all. If anybody puts up something like that, then I really would question, you know, what on earth they're playing at. Even people who research, professional researchers, need to be very, very careful when you research anything to do with the two brothers, because they have a history of command and control on this planet, and indeed other places. And if you get drawn to a website and you follow anything on there, then you can inadvertently sign a contract that links your soul to something else. Is it possible to break it? Yes, it is. If you willingly enter into a contract, it is incredibly difficult but not impossible to break it. If you are tricked or duped, or you don't understand something, then it's very easy to get out of it, because if someone has used a duplicitous method to entrap you, then it's not binding in the first instance. But if you fully understand what you're entering into and you sign up to that, that is very difficult to break out of. So no, I don't know about the site. And unless I knew the site and I knew what that individual had done and what they signed up for, but only by having the full picture would I be in a position to go any further than that. So I would just use the question as a warning to everybody to steer clear of anything like that. Do not get involved in that, because even if you're desperate and you're really worried, if you do something like that, then it's likely that these organizations are preying upon your vulnerability. They're preying upon your desperateness. And, you know, please don't get involved in something like that. So thank you for alerting me to that. But no, I have no knowledge of that particular site.
Okay, so here's the other one. Well, here's the other one. The other question of the 400 questions that were asked today. So here, you have said before that, this is from Spirit Doctors. You said before that human hybrids don't last long. But who are the, quote, humans made from our genetic material who are flying spacecraft? I had a beautiful interaction with a female who was my genetic daughter, but was off planet. She told me she flies the ships and her intelligence was much greater than normal humans. So how and where was she, quote, created? Did she begin her existence within my body, then extracted and enhanced? I really don't understand this. How was I selected, or was it just random? However, I have seen past lives where it sees I was used for breeding also. I'm just trying to fit everything together, and thank you, Simon, for the work you do to educate us.
Thank you very much for that. That's because it's emotional to you, it's a very emotionally charged questions. There's several questions in there. I'm going to try and answer them as best I can. You're quite right. I've said in the past that certain human hybrids don't last very long. It's very sad, but they equivalently to the equivalent of go insane. But there are many sorts of hybrids, and the hybrids that I'm referring to are those that don't look particularly human. They are you still there, JP?
Yep.
Yes, right. We're just getting a lot of interference at the moment. The sort of hybrids that I'm referring to are ones that don't look particularly human. They have these sort of bulging heads. The hair is falling out. They have no eyebrows. They don't have any eyelashes. Their mouths are very small. Their ears are very, very tiny. And this particular group, which I think were prevalent between sort of about 1850 and the 1950s, 1960s, they were at that time the leading range of basic hybridized groups. And what the questioner is referring to is something that is far more advanced, that either is in a cloned body or is in a real biological body, but is not designed to live on the earth. And this is the key. If you are attempting genetically to mix alien off-planet material with on-planet material, it has to work on the Earth with a certain type of atmosphere and a certain type of gravity, and it has to be accepted by the Earth. And that's what most people don't get, that the Earth is a living creature. She is a living creature, and any creature or plant or insect or anything that is not brought from this Earth, is not part of this Earth, has the potential to be rejected by the Earth. That's why the reptilians are rejected by the Earth, because they are not at all from the Earth. So if you create a hybridized form with, let's say, 10% human and 90% alien, they won't thrive here, because it's not their frequency. It's not the way they are. And a lot of the early experiments were too heavily alienized, so they didn't have that type of anchor to the Earth. Now, if you are traveling in point. You're in space all the time, and you only come to the Earth on occasions. Then they don't have to worry about that. So that, I hope, answers that question. You're asking about you. No, it's not random. It's all about bloodlines. It's about genetics. It's about psychic capability. It's about the soul in your body. Excuse me. If you've had 10,000 lifetimes as a mantid, or 10,000 lifetimes as a Nordic, well, you know, you are going to be interacted by members of your family. And it is possible, with or without your permission, that you could be used what you call a breeding program. That's a very harsh term, but it's the term you've used. And so you could be, you know, used to either nurture life, bring forth life, or as a surrogate mother. Depending on the process, generally speaking, a human or human type female becomes pregnant, the baby is taken out of the womb, things are done and it's put back in again. Then that child can then be born naturally, but the work's already been done, or the mother becomes pregnant and then the child is taken full stop. And often the mother in the hospital are wondering, well, where did that baby go to? All of these, unless the mother really understands, are quite traumatic. And even if you do understand, it must be quite traumatic. I'm not a female. I've never given birth, not in this body anyway. And I have no concept of what that must be like. But this goes on, and no wonder the establishment don't want to discuss it, because many of them are complicit with it. It's part of the deal that they have with a number of off-planet entities, particularly the reptilians and the greys. So, you know, it's a really big topic. You brought up a subject that I could spend an hour taking your questions on and discussing with you. But I'm just going to have to leave it there and say that if you did want to take it further with me, then, you know, yours is exactly the sort of, interesting case that you could email me, and then we could have a chat, and I could sort of offer some support and help for you. So, Simon, Parks, 3@btopenworld.com. So, you know, you're not on your own. There are literally thousands, hundreds of thousands of women across the planet who have that experience. So thank you for writing in.
Excellent. So, right. So it was, we're really going deep into it. So next question. This is head of Satanic Quote Church. Hi, Simon. You mentioned that the head of Satanic Church was essentially decapitated. Was this a fourth dimensional being that left the planet, so that the being that used to appear during satanic rituals no longer appears, or was it a human being who left the body? And is it a coincidence that David Rockefeller died shortly before this? Much love, Anna.
Right. It is not the same entity appearing in different countries, not the same entity who will appear in all the different lodges or covens or magical places or rituals. There are a series of them that will appear, but there is only one, or his stand-in, who will appear at each year. There is one or two meetings a year which are not in the eyes of the press. I mean, the Bilderberger meeting, the press know about it, the public know about it, they know where they're going to hold it, they can demonstrate. Well, if you were a satanic entity, you would not allow any members of your cabinet to let anybody know where you were meeting. It would be absolutely top secret. So then those meetings, like the Bilderberger meeting, they're not appearing there. They're appearing at meetings where the public and the press don't even know about it officially. We have, say, three or four of these entities that travel around the planet and will take part in meetings. In terms of the head, yes, the head is gone. And so what you've got is not so much infighting that's taking place, but factions or cabals. And I don't mean the cabal that we all understand. I'm talking about cabals within cabals. So that you might have one particular group saying, well, we're going to change direction and we're going to do this, which might be diametrically opposed to the group in the United States, which might be diametrically opposed to the group in Europe. Before that, all of these groups were working to one instruction. That's gone now. All of these groups are looking out for themselves and they will do dirty deals against their own groups within themselves. You know, it's made it far more complicated. However, on the positive side, it means it's very difficult now for them to get money. That's what it's all about, I'm afraid. And remember, money can also be energy. And to use that from a global perspective. In the bad old days, you could charge your batteries up after lots of people had worshipped and got down on their knees and, you know, I'm a sinner, please forgive me. And they gave their sovereignty, we call it louche. And then you, as a bad guy, you'd have that energy and you could go do with it what you want. But now it's not going to a central place. It's been divvied up amongst these groups. And so they've actually got more commitments than they've got energy to play with. And that's what we're seeing. We're seeing they've got, say, 10 items that need to be dealt with, but they've only got the energy for 4 or 5 of them. And this is what's causing the panic. This is what's causing them to fragment, because they used to be able to maintaining the status quo just about, or being able to respond quickly to a situation. Well, they can't do that now. So that's what these terror attacks are about, because it's the only way that evil, nasty, horrible people can hit out, that they don't understand anything else. So they'll try and cause panic and dissent and anger, because they hope that that produces energy. What they want is people to start fighting other people, because that is a fuel they can use. Now, that's not happening. Think about the attack in Manchester, where Asian Muslim taxi drivers were giving free lifts to non-Muslims to get them the heck out of there. So the way Manchester responded was not in a typical way. Everybody tried to help everybody else. That didn't produce any louche. It didn't produce any energy over and above the initial explosion and the pain and suffering that occurred. That obviously fed some evil people. The follow through from that never occurred. And that's what we want. We want the spirit of humanity to outshine the low level, low life, negative Satan people. And I'm, you know, very positive about the future, but we just need to understand that there are still a group of people in power who are, well, always were mad, but they've become dangerously mad. So thank you for the question.
Fabulous. Dangerously mad. Oh, here's a nice light subject of the future. Ferex, from Miriam. Dear Simon, thanks for everything you do for humanity. How can you tell us, can you tell us the state of us? Can you tell us the status of Ferex, how we can get it, and whether there will be an app for PCs or indeed Androids?
Right. The status is that we've hit a brick wall because we are not yet getting the support that we need. We really didn't want, that's Win and my heart, we really didn't want to approach a commercial backer, a corporation, and say, we need to get this off the ground. And the commercial organization saying, yeah, absolutely, we'll give you whatever you need, because then what would happen is that we would be in a situation where somebody else with no commitment to the human race would have a very large say in a project that was designed for the people. So we're looking at an alternative strategy, and I'm not going to say at the moment what that is, but we're looking at an alternative strategy to raise finance. It is, for me, totally astounding that the 20 football clubs in Great Britain, the 20 top British football clubs in Great Britain, last year banked £3.6 billion. I'm going to say that again because it's staggering. So the 20 top British football clubs banked £3.6 billion. So plenty of people want to go and watch football. Plenty of people want to watch it on their television, and, you know, organizations like Sky will charge a lot of money. I mean, I just stopped my Sky subscription because it was just getting ridiculous. But of course, what happens is that they pay football clubs a huge amount of money, and they're getting their money off of people who view it. So there's all this money knocking about, and here's Wynn and I trying to get a product out there that will basically set people free, for goodness sake. That's what it will do, and it will help tremendously. But we can't seem to get through the barrier. It seems that people want the product. We want it now. Let's have it. But they're not really prepared to support or help us. Now, I'm not cross about that, because I understand that it's about control. It's about conditioning. I don't mean mind control. I'm talking about just society's control. And we could just throw the towel in and just go to a venture capitalist and say, we need the money. And, you know, but within a year of doing that, we would find that we'd probably be taken over, and it would just end up as another corporate's control system. And so we have another plan, which we had a meeting this weekend, and we came up with a solution which we think will do very well, but means that we will raise the finance independently and be able to do it. The whole point about it is it works on your mobile phone. This is chosen because the mobile phone and humans are inseparable. I don't mean that from a bad point of view. I mean it from a good point of view. You know, you go out in the morning with two things, your keys, either for the car or for the house or the apartment, and your mobile phone. You probably need your wallet, but hey, you can even pay things on your mobile phone, can't you? So mobile phone is the important thing. And so the app will be for the mobile phone. Will it be for your PC? No, because it's going to work via phone mast technology, not by Wi-Fi. We don't want this to work by Wi-Fi. We don't like Wi-Fi. This will work by phone mast technology. It means it will work with Android phones, iPhones. Do you know what? It'll even work with analog phones. And we've done that deliberately because very, very poor people in India, Pakistan, Africa, some of the South American countries, and there are many others as well, don't have digital phones. Believe it or not, they have analog phones. So we wanted this product to be for everybody, whether you had the latest iPhone or a phone that was 10 years old. And that's what it'll do, and it will work really well. So the project is very much alive, but we're having to do a very sneaky dance to try to ensure that we keep this project independent from certain individuals or corporates who, once they really get to grips with it, will realize from their perspective it will make them absolutely millions. We don't want people investing in this project because it will make them millions. We want people investing in this project because it will make millions for the people of the planet, and it will set the planet free. You know, and give an example, and Wynn gave an example when he did an interview. And we've got a joint interview with Linda Moulton Howe coming up in the next week or so, and that's going to be exciting. Because of the control system on this planet, if you run around with placards saying "Save the whale," "Save the rainforest," it doesn't do any good. But if you said, okay, how much is an acre of rainforest? How much does a whale cost? And they, you know, everything on this planet sadly has got a price on it. That's what they do. So let's just say, we're arbitrarily here, that 100 square miles of rainforest was £1 billion. Let's just say that. This project that Wynn and I are working on has the potential over time to be able to say to a government in South America, Brazil, we want to buy 100 miles of rainforest. We want to buy it on behalf of the human race, and we will pay you the going rate for it. So they understand that because, oh, that's real estate. You know, they bought it. what are you going to do with it? Chop it down? No, we're not going to chop it down. We're just going to leave it. Or how much does a whale cost? How much would it cost to put a 100-mile sanctuary out in that bit of ocean? Okay, we might need to mark the whale so that it doesn't get harpooned and killed.
How much would a whaling fleet cost?
Yes. And turn it into a sightseeing fleet.
Absolutely.
So that's what we want. But we won't get that if Mr. Rockefeller comes along and says, I like the sound of your project, boys. Here's all the money you want. But by the way, I want to be a shareholder in your company. You see, that's how companies get taken over, because the big boys come in with all their tainted money and they just get on the board. And before you can say, Bob's your uncle, then you've got to pay out and you're out off the board. So that's the situation. We are just looking at a different route. So thank you for asking that. Thank you.
So there's a supplementary question come in. Is there a PayPal or crowdfunding site that the people who are listening to this show, I mean, if you had £5 from everybody who listens to the YouTube come in through a PayPal site, you'd have enough for a year to go, wouldn't you?
Yes. What? Absolutely. And we are going to do that. The point about the crowdsourcing is that it's over something like a 6-week period. You have 6 weeks to raise the money. And in most cases, if you don't raise the money you say you're going to raise, you have to give it all back. There are a couple of sites where you can keep it. The other thing is that nearly all of the crowdsourcing sites don't let you give shares to your crowdsourcers. There's only one site, which is the one we're looking at, which is in Finland. Because what we wanted to do was when somebody gave us a donation, we gave them a share in the company. You see, this is revolutionary. This is absolutely unique. What normally happens is you crowdsource, you get a T-shirt, or you get a piece of paper, or if it's an object, you say, well, you know, you gave us money for the crowdsourcing, so instead of $100, it only cost you 70, so you get a discount. That's the normal way they understand it. What we want to do is give people a say in the company. So that's been a problem. However, we will fairly shortly now have a crowdsourcing site, which we will go and advertise as widely as we can. It's really important, because if we don't hit the figure that we say we're going to hit, we give the money back. And I don't have a problem in giving money back, but it means the project won't go ahead. So we're waiting to see. There are a couple of ethical funders who we're approaching. For what is actually a very relatively small amount of money, wouldn't give them a share by any means, but would give us a little bit of leeway. But when we're ready to roll this out to the public, then by and, you know, be assured that we will do as much advertising as we can. It's in our interest to do so. And on the back of that, basically in, I think Thursday or Friday, the Financial Times, I beg your pardon, the Times newspaper, its sister paper is the Financial Times, but in the Times newspaper in Britain, on the front page at the very top, it's talking about a housing crash, a very big housing crash that I warned about last July and said was coming this year. Well, here we have the premier established newspaper in Great Britain basically saying what I said a year ago, 11 months ago. That there is a housing crash coming. So we need this product, FairX. We need it, because it doesn't matter whether you're on benefits, whether you're a small business, whether you're relatively okay. You are going to need this product, because it will allow you to maintain your level of trade at some form of subsistence. Because if the banks do go down, as is looking increasingly likely in October, this is a method to save all of us for a short period of time. So, you know, we're hopeful. We are just having to be a little bit clever with it. So thank you for the question.
Yeah. Well, maybe I should bring you in. You've got time for you and Wynne to have a chat one afternoon on Ever Beyond, and we can, I can throw some questions at you about, as like, a sort of idiot user might ask.
Absolutely. I mean, what Wynne's devising is, what we call white papers, frequently asked questions, but I guess the questions from you would be more pertinent. So that's probably a really good idea. So yeah, of course we'd
Yeah, because you know, I'm quite a pioneer in alternative currency. To blow my own trumpet and fly my own flag. I've been members of many LET systems and written LET system software and stuff like that. So,
we know that. That's why you're involved in it.
Yeah.
But the point is, at this stage, it is raising the money up. Now, I think when we get to a point where we have a fairly clear idea in terms of crowdsourcing, then anybody who we've taken into our confidence, which includes you, we'd have like a round table meeting. Mm-hmm. And we would then sit around and say, these are the options we've got. What do you think? Now, also separately, what ideas have you got? So what we're doing, Wynne and I, is gauging the level of support and looking where the blockages are. And when we've got a better idea, which will probably be the next 2 weeks, then probably for the next radio show, actually, we'll probably be chatting with you and several other people, JP.
Good. Good, good, good. Okay. Now, from a previous listener, Pseudo Cerberus, the topic, gender and reptilians. Dear Simon, yeah, this is a relatively long question. It ends in thank you and blessings, okay? So, the question is androgyny, or the ability to harmonize both genders physically or energetically, important to reptilians? Are any reptilians hermaphroditic in nature? And is the female aspect the greater power, the mouth that gives life and the mouth that takes life, mother, protector, maintainer and destroyer? This is about female energy. I see female energy as central and male energy the vector for this principal energy. My instinct is telling me that not all reptilians that appear male are. I believe that in reptilians, like in many reptiles, birds of prey and theropod dinosaurs, it is the female that is the largest. Spiritually speaking, female energy is fantastic at operating as a central control, not simply to expand, but to maintain and equalize, something the reptilians excel at. A being with female core energy but male external energy can operate as their own hub and penetrative vector, opposed to a true male, which is ultimately sacrificial. Thank you and blessings. So the question is yeah, do you get all that? Are any reptilians hermaphroditic? Is it the what's the male female relationship and expression in reptilian world?
Right, the reptilians that have a long history on this planet are separately male and female. There are reptilians that have no gender at all, but the ones that we deal with, Enlil and Enki and Anu, the title, and others, are male and female. We know this to be true simply because our own culture, that's been heavily influenced by reptilian, shows that. So, for instance, in the Catholic Church, there was only ever one female pope, a papess, who was eventually got rid of. And that's why until very recently, a woman couldn't enter into the church. You know, she could only go in as a parishioner. She couldn't go in as a priest or a vicar. So here we have a very strong indicator that the patriarchal energy was considered more important than the matriarchal energy. We need to be a bit more clear here. In Darwinianism, the female is generally bigger in many species than the male because it has to carry the eggs. It has to nurture the young. But that's not the case in many mammals. The male gorilla is bigger than the female gorilla. The human male is generally bigger than the human female. And anything that has a link with the creativity of a reptilian history will be patriarchal. That's not to say that other alien species of reptilians are all male-female. Remember the culture with the reptilian group, the Draconis, who ruled and still rule after a fashion. The reptilian command and control on this planet, you know, your offspring, if brought forth from sex with a sister or a half-sister, any child that came from that union was going to be the next king or queen. And that's exactly the same in the Babylon times, in the Sumerian times, and the pharaohs of ancient Egypt. So if a pharaoh could get a half-sister pregnant, then basically that child would become the next pharaoh. So we know through absolute evidence that the reptilian group that dominated, has dominated this planet for a very long time, is very strongly patriarchal. However, the old joke about the power behind the throne, the patriarchal energy is the figurehead, and then when the curtain is pulled, the feminine energy then starts to get to work and can shape policy and change laws. And that's how it's done and is still done in the reptilian court, that the patriarchal edifice, male makes the pronouncements, something comes up which isn't liked, it is the female who goes to the male and gets him to change the rules. So that's how it works.
Mm-hmm. So, on probably a brief question, a brief answer, Rose is asking on tall white aliens. Hello, Simon and JP. I was wondering if you could give some information about the tall white aliens. What planet or star system are they from? What is their relationship to the Anunnaki and the Archons, and are they at the top levels controlling this planet? Thanks so much for your time and attention, Rose.
Thank you, Rose. It's very kind of you. No, they're not Archons. They're not linked to Archons. They're not actually linked to a control system on the planet. The tall whites are your archetypal ET. They're not interdimensional. They are genuinely extraterrestrial, which means that when they travel here in real time. They don't come through a portal. They actually get in a spacecraft and they fly in real time. The tall whites, and it takes about 26 years for them to get here. The crafts they fly are of the same type in terms of the propulsion system as the crafts that Billy Meyer spoke about. The shape is different, but the propulsion system is the same. The propulsion system is a figure of eight, which shouldn't surprise people. But is a what is relatively primitive form of nuclear power, and is incredibly unstable. And although this is going to sound totally bizarre, it's entirely the truth. These craft take around 26 years to get here. For 25 and a half years, they travel at just under the speed of light, and they're so problematical that there is a 12% chance that when they flip or reverse the drive, it will destroy itself and kill all of them. And they actually have a party. Now, I don't want you to imagine a party as humans would have. Perhaps the word celebration is better. They have a celebration when it's successful. Obviously, if it's not successful, they wouldn't celebrate because their bodies would be blasted all over the universe. But they actually have a celebratory party, the fact they've done it. They've been, for the last 70 years, quite involved with both the United States Air Force and the United States Ground Forces, the military. They do land in Area 51. It's their semi-permanent home. They have, under escort, gone out into casinos in Nevada. They have gone into shops to buy things, to experience things. They look humanish if they're made up and have the right clothes on, but they're clearly not. So they're not part of the Archons, they're not part of the reptilians, they are an independent group that has made a deal, a loose deal, with the United States individual military units, not the American government, but the individual units who've been tasked with looking after them, and is Earth is a stopping off point. So it's a really good question. Thank you very much indeed for that.
So what star system are they from?
It's one I can't remember. I will get back to you on that one. It's the one thing that I'm pretty useless at remembering. Stars and quadrants and all the rest of it. They're numbered. I think in human terms it's going to have a name, but they will refer to it purely as a set series of digits. They don't have names. They don't, you know, it's a very human thing to give names. When you are so locked in with technology as these creatures are, they don't have names. They have codes or,
Oh, I see. So sector 438 is a real coordinate.
Well, they'll give numbers. That's how they'll look at it, because they don't give names. It's a human thing. You know, we call a dog Fido.
Yeah.
Or, you know, whatever. Well, they don't, none of them that I know of have that. They don't have that concept. I remember being in a facility, and talking to a computer, and I said to the computer, "What's your name?" And the computer said, "I don't have a name. Do you want to give me a name?" It's just something that we humans do. Mm-hmm. So, but I guess if I looked at a map, a star map, I'm pretty sure of it, I could actually say, "Oh, that's what we call it." And then I can come back on your radio show and I can say, "All right, that's the human name for it." Because if I looked at the right part of a map, then I would have a pretty clear idea of where they come from. I know it's 20, the speed of light's 186,000 miles a second. So they're traveling at about 179,000 miles a second. So 26 years, or 25 and a half years at that speed gives you, and I know which direction it's coming from. So that would be, you know, I could work out where it came from.
Right. Have you heard of Stellarium, Simon?
No, I haven't.
That's what you want. It's a observatory. It's free software, runs on your PC. Stellarium. Okay. Everybody can get it. It's brilliant.
Huh? I'll look at that.
It's a Linux thing as well. You can type in your, is it right ascension and declination? Is that the right coordinate term? Yeah.
Absolutely.
And you can type that in. It's like Google Sky. Google Sky will do that as well.
Wonderful.
Yeah. So you stick your coordinates in it. So there you go. Right. So
tea time.
Tea time. Yes. I thought, since we're talking about money, we wanted a nice old time one. Here's Frank Sinatra with "Pennies from Heaven." And welcome back. I don't know if Simon's back or not.
Hello.
Oh, you are. Excellent. Excellent. Such perfect timing. "Pennies from Heaven," indeed. Has the penny dropped yet? Here's a question, strange questions, many strange questions. Here, we deal with the strange here. Dear Simon and JP, this is from Daniela. Is it true that most of the well-known people, royals, politicians, celebrities, are transgendered? Example, Michelle Obama was born a man, then switched into a woman. What is the reason behind this agenda? Thank you so much for all you do and for your strength and courage. Together we will build this battle and we will win this battle and humanity will be free again. Lots of love to you and God bless you. Danny. So, transgendered, born a woman, end up a man, born a man, end up a woman. I remember flowers. That's strange being. Do you remember flowers? During the Y2K things, there was this fellow, Gwyneth Flowers. She was like some government spokesperson, and it turns out she was in my father-in-law's brigade as General Flowers, a male. And anyway, so long story, but, the transgenderism in terms of people in the news that, people are not what they seem.
Right.
What's the story?
I know lots of Americans talk about Michelle Obama having a sex change or this, that, and the other. I haven't met Michelle Obama, and it's not something that's come across my radar, basically. What I can say is that within the Illuminati culture, there is a preponderance, there is an offshoot for such things to happen. It sits sort of alongside the magical grouping. It's generally in terms of control and in terms of family units. In other words, that you would have a traditional patriarchal type family, but you might have somebody in there who has had a change in their sexual design. And that allows the controlling organization to blackmail them. It's for no other reason than that, purely and simply to blackmail somebody. Not just that person, but the person they live with or the person they're married to. And if that is a high-end family, then it could bring that family down. So one of the reasons for doing that is simply for a control network. Is it widespread? No, it's not. It's incredibly as a small operation, not at all widely met with. But yes, there is definitely a route within the system to provide that. So you're right, but I don't want to give the impression that this is widespread. It's not.
So it's a thing, but it's not a big thing. Okay. So my 7-year-old, Pemberley, my 7-year-old, who is very serious for her age, said one day she was in one of the bedrooms in her house and with no warning, a black ghost came out of a picture and sneered at her. He looked like he didn't expect to see her, so he went back into the picture. When I asked her what the ghost looked like, she said he looked mean and sneered at her and looked like an evil genie from Disney movies or cartoons. She said it really looked like a genie, not a ghost, but it moved fast like a ghost and all black with a mean face. Okay, so what was it? Shall I have the house saged? Should I throw away the picture? The print picture is a print. It's not old. It's new with a glass front wooden frame. One day I did walk into the room and all the pictures were askew. I asked everyone if they had moved them and everyone said no. What should we do? No. What should we do? Could the thing in the picture harm us? Thank you for all you both do. I love listening to your show and I wish you were on every Sunday. I have left several messages on Simon's website for readings but haven't heard anything. Thanks again. So, get that?
Yeah, we'll start with the last one first.
Yes.
We're just about to take the next bunch of inquiries and start processing them. We tend to do it in groups. So people may email and not hear for 2 weeks, but then we take the groups and we do it as a bunch. Right. Incredibly frustrating to me. this isn't meant rudely at all. It is incredibly frustrating for me because the questioner hasn't described the print that this thing came out of. All we know is it's a print. It's absolutely vital that I know what it was. Was it a picture or a painting? Was it a drawing? Was it a photograph? What was it of? Absolutely vital. Okay, that's the first point. Second point is whenever you have a child that reports something like that, you give them crayons and a piece of paper and you say, go and draw for me. And you don't stand over them, you let them draw. And over a period of time, you will get drawings that clearly represent what that child has seen. This is the less traumatic way to do it. It's also the more accurate way. So we don't have the evidence, unfortunately, of any drawings before us. We don't have any evidence of the prints. We do have evidence that more than one picture was knocked askew. This is not a ghost. It is a djinn. It's an interdimensional entity. It is using the picture as a portal. That's why it's so important to know what to do with it. We've got to be very careful. If you destroy the portal, you may destroy its only method of getting away, in which case you'll trap it in the house. If it's out of the portal at the time you destroy the picture, and we have to be very careful about this. The other pictures are all askew. There are several reasons for that, but we can't speculate without more information. What I can say to you is, yes, that's a djinn. Your daughter has already told you that because she said that's a genie. And when the word genie comes from djinn. I think what I'd ask you to do is to email me again, and in the title of the So if you email directly, simon.parks3@btopenworld.com, if you put the title JINN in the heading, then I will, or whoever very kindly goes through my emails, will actually spot that, and you'll get a reading. You need some assistance because there's a child involved. And one thing that's very important is that children are targeted by these creatures, and we need to ensure that they are safe. Okay, thank you very much. I see you give me an email.
Yeah, I just put the email there.
Oh, that's fine. Okay, well then, to the listener, I've got your email here, so I'll be in touch with you. You don't need to email me. I've got it. Thank you. Right, before we go on to the next one, it's thank you time.
Oh, yeah. I should have a little music bed for this. But anyway, go on.
You could create a violin playing. So first of all, I want to thank people who've donated. It's so kind of you. Thank you so much. Here we go. This one's called Hypnofix. What a lovely name. So thank you, Hypnofix. Kirby, Lydia, looks like Ing or Inge. I'm sorry if I can't pronounce your name properly.
That would be pronounced Inga.
Oh, Inga. Fantastic. Carolyn, Hilda, Michael, Jason, Cherilyn, Anne, John, Sandra, Rudolph, Chi, Christine, Stephen, Helen, Marguerite, Ram Trading. Thank you very much, Ram Trading. That's I've got my beans and toast again now. Kim, Simone, Natalie, Can Tu Cha, Daniela, Mia, Michael K. There were two Michaels, so there's Michael and this is Michael K. Thank you, Michael K. Michael, Luis, Pamela, Bruno, Drumset, that's another great one, Drumset, love that. George, Eddie, Samantha, Diana, Vincent, Candice, Murray, Joanne, Sajad and Sue, that's S-U. So thank you ever so much. Now, those of you who have been very kind and donated and I haven't read your name out, I'm really sorry, but hopefully next time I will. Thank you to everyone who supports me and keeps my website open, keeps me to be able to drive around to do conferences, and just to survive because I don't have the day job. So thanks very much. Okay, JP, that's it.
Excellent. Thank you for everybody who also donates to Wolf Spirit Radio. There was a change and some people might find that their subscription has kind of refused them. You'll see it. So just go back and refresh your details and it should work. It should work. I don't know. Anyhow. Now this is a really, this is left field and of the left field. This is a dream from Debbie of, she dreamt last night I had an experience with a very sloth-like creature, which was very real. And he showed himself to me as being Tiger, who's a rapper, once he undergoes a big process to change himself. The location was a seedy warehouse with dark sex vibe to it. Is this a type of reptilian, and could this have been a visitation?
I really don't have enough information to give any response to that at all. I really welcome people writing in. But I need to have much more information. To an individual, sometimes I don't remember everything, and there are certain things that they remember. For instance, when I was about 5 years old, and I did, my recollection of the character I called Dad, to me as a 5 year old, his wings, the residual wings, seemed huge. So of course, when I would replicate them, they would be really big. And now when I look at it now, I think, well, no, that's not right. I was seeing them with the eyes of a 5 year old. They need to be much smaller. So when we see things, we, unless you have the experience, you don't tend to report what someone like myself needs to be able to take it further. You tend to say the things that impressed you, on an energy level, but from a dispassionate point of view, That's not the information that I need. So there is just not enough there for me to tell you anything at all. I'm really sorry. You need to get in touch with me, and give me much more information. Thank you.
Okay. This is from Maziar. Thank you for your great work. I'm going to abbreviate some of this. Well, the question is about black goo and its relationship to the Archons. And this is the experience. In mornings before I wake up, almost every day while I'm in a sleep, the state between being awake and asleep, I've encountered many different beings, such as a hand to smoky figures. But on one occasion, an entity grabbed me from my bed, and when he stood me straight, energetically, in an energetic body, he attached himself to the back of my neck, trying to suck something. At the time, I wasn't afraid. I was just angry for his intrusion. So I tried to get him away from me, and by grabbing his hands, they felt to be made of some kind of plastic, and he himself felt to be like a jelly being. What do you think it was? Was it an Archon? Was it something else? Or was it just a projection of my own imaginations? So.
No, it's not a projection of your imagination at all. If I was a psychiatrist, which I'm not, I'd probably say you were making it all up because you'd had too much cheese the night before. The reality is that what you've described is a vampire, not in the true sense of the word that we would think of the horror films, but a vampiric entity. You are much better placed to immediately repulse these creatures. No matter how brave you might feel, you just need to say, get away from me. I don't want you near me. I don't give you permission. There's no deal between us. And you need to leave now because I'm not going to, you know, hold this space with you at all. So you feel these creatures coming to you, push them away, reject them totally. You're describing several entities here. The classic djinn, potentially a shadow being, but I think you've described a djinn. You're talking about a sort of a reptilian, but certainly the attaching to the neck, that is a vampiric entity. I don't understand where the black goo comes in with this.
Well, I think she was implying that the being that she, cause she couldn't see him, it was behind him, a bit behind her. There's a question in the middle. What's your take on black goo? And are there two types of black goo, an alien and an unearthly one? And have the Archons come here by the alien black goo?
Right. Okay. No, the aliens have not come here by the black goo. there are two sorts of black goo. There's a native version and there is a transported alien version, which is attempting to subvert the native version. And Archons, are using the black goo because it's a sentient, it's neither, organic in terms of mammal, but neither is it a computer, so it's more like silicon. It's something that maintains its own consciousness, and the Archons are trying to work with it, so that's absolutely accurate. But the Archons and the black goo are not associated if you trace it back in time. So thank you for that.
Okay. Now this is quite an interesting one. This is about hybrids. Hi, Simon. Humans have the capacity to expand their consciousness into very high dimensions, and many other physical beings like reptilians don't have or have lost this possibility and have been creating genetic hybrids with human genes. Do these hybrids have this capacity, and will humans lose this capacity with the actual transhuman agenda? Thank you for your great service, Andy.
It's a really good question. That's why we've got to resist transhumanism, full stop. one of the reasons, there are many reasons, but one of the reasons that geneticists off-planet have been hybridizing humans with something else is precisely because they want what we have and we take so for granted. If you take the connection to potentially the 12 strands of DNA, which remember, reptilians don't have, greys don't have, mantids don't have. Only things that are related to the human tree have access to. This is what they're all after. You know, it's not just gold, platinum, that trades for a very high price. It's genetics. So if you could put together a human creature that has a bloodline history, that's very psychic, that has the potential to connect to the 12 strands of DNA, and you then genetically put in with a off-planet alien whose evolution is 20, 30, 40, 50 times longer than the human race, so who has a superior intellect. I'm not talking about superior spirituality, superior intellect, and you can combine a superior intellect with the potential of the 12 strands of DNA, you then have a creature that has the capability of hypnotizing just about everyone and anyone within 10 feet of it. You have the ability to be hugely telepathic. You have the ability to communicate with animals. You have the ability to switch lights off and on with your mind. You have the ability to intercept telephone calls. This is why, from that perspective, it is so profitable to combine human and non-human genetics. And also because, you know, vast majority of these off-planet creatures don't know what it's like to feel. They don't know what it's like to experience. So that's one of the major reasons. There are several, but that's one of the major reasons why there's such a drive, and there has been for goodness knows how long, to hybridize humans and something else. Yeah, good question.
Oh, so that's to anchor their DNA into the body of being able to accept it, like a kind of hook thing.
Well, that's if you want to live on the planet. You don't, if you have no intention of staying here, then you don't need to go to that level. Sometimes when I talk to groups, I say, I want you to imagine a needle on a dial, and it goes from, let's just say, 1 to 12. And if 6 is equal, that's 50% human material, 50% alien material. So if you put your needle at 6, you've got a 50-50 split. So if you drop the needle down to 3, you've got very, very little alien and lots of humans. So what you've got is something that looks really human, but doesn't have any telepathy, doesn't have telekinesis, you know, is you know, just quiet from that point of view. But if you push the needle up to 8, 9, 10, you have something that looks less and less human, more and more strange, but has more and more psychic gifts. And the problem is that as you push that needle up to 10 and 11, that creature is A, not going to be accepted by human society because it's going to look totally non-human. B, it's not anchored energetically into the planet, so they will start to develop a lot of diseases. Their bodies won't function properly, and the planet doesn't want them. So all of these experiments have been, how far can you push this needle on the dial up towards the alien part before the planet rejects them? And that's the point. So you'll get something that's really, really looks the business, and is very, very telepathic. So they were right on the button. They got it absolutely spot on. But the next one that comes off the production line, you know, the needle may have been in the same position, but the genetics were from different donors or were subject to different vagaries. Therefore, it doesn't work so well. So it is a science, and that's why, you know, I've Skyped with people that, you know, had children, and the child had a toe missing. This is a true story, no names, obviously, and the child had a toe missing. And the child, who was very young, maybe 4 or 5 years old, said, oh, they got the blueprint wrong. A child of 4 or 5 years old telling its mother the reason it didn't have a toe was because they got the blueprint wrong. How many children do we know at the ages of 3 or 4 who point up to the stars and tell their mother, I come from there. You know, this is the reality that the system doesn't want. Before we go on to the next question, you used the introduction and you said, has the penny dropped yet? And I want to talk about money. I was in a local shop today, and this is funny but sad, and I would put this child at no more than 1 to 1.5 years old, toddler. The child was crying, deeply upset, and was not saying mummy, mummy, because that's what you think the child was crying for, its mother, its mummy. The child had come out of a shop, the parent was a dad, hadn't let the child get something in the shop, presumably a sweet, I really don't know. And the child was beside itself crying, and the child was saying, money, money, money. And that's dreadful, absolutely dreadful. That's the mind control. That's the systems establishment's control. It's a 1.5 year old child crying because its father didn't give it money, so it couldn't get what it wanted in the shop. And this is what I've said on this radio show several times, that by the time, and I use the age 3 or 4, I've said by the time a child was 3 or 4, it was already society programmed that it gives money to the shopkeeper. The shopkeeper gives it something. But he was a 1 year old to a 1.5 year old crying because it wanted money. And that's why it's so difficult for people to grasp a concept like FairX. Look, JP and the audience, you've grasped it. You're here, you're listening, you understand it, you've got it. But the millions and millions and millions of people who don't grasp it, don't get it, to them, the concept of money is a very, very, very tightly defined avenue or railroad. It's a highway that goes from one place to another. And when you try to move the human race off that highway, the fear and the panic set in. And no wonder, he was a 1.5 year old who was already in the program of, I need money. And if I don't get money, I'm going to go into panic and I'm going to be terribly upset. So that's an important lesson I just wanted to share with everyone. Thank you.
No money, no power. So from Jerry in Bondi Beach. Greetings from Bondi Beach, Sydney. Could you tell me the difference between a star system in the fourth dimension and a star system in the third dimension? You say that extra dimensional beings come from different dimensions, but also originate from star systems that exist in the third dimension, such as Orion and Andromeda. Do these beings exist on planets in the third dimension, or are we just able to see the star system but not the creatures? Could you please explain why we see star systems in the third dimension, but these creatures only inhabit the fourth dimension? Thanks for your help. Right. I believe you've given a lot of hope to a lot of people. Keep up the good work, Jerry.
Thank you. I hope so. That's why I do it. It's about having no fear. Remember that a being from the fourth or the fifth or the sixth dimension can appear in our dimension. But they may not appear in the form or the shape that we expect them to, but they do. So when many, many listeners would have seen orbs, when an orb appears, that is somebody from a higher dimension sending his or her consciousness into our reality. If you think about our solar system and everything we see in the third dimension. Planets and stars are by and large round. That's because the third dimensional energy is heavy. So when you put energy or intent into a third dimensional reality, it is forced into a ball shaped. That's why when we see orbs, it's consciousness. It's somebody in another dimension who wants to remote view us in a different way than humans remote view, but they wish to send their consciousness down into our reality. Not their physical body, just their intent to observe, to watch and listen. But when it arrives in our heavy, dense, third dimensional environment, it's forced into a ball. It's opaque, you can see through it. Sometimes you can see a face in there or something else. But that's why it's round. A being from the fifth dimension can appear in our third dimensional reality physically. There are far too many eyewitness accounts of beings that are not just energy projections. They're not just, you know, the energy body. They are real physical beings, and it's possible to do that. When we talked about shadow beings, they come from the fourth dimension. When they only partly traverse through to our reality, they are black. That's why they're called shadow beings. It's deliberately part of their project. You know, think about the projects that are called black projects. They're called black projects because you can't shine light on them. And when these beings come through from the fourth to the third dimension, they only partly come through. Now, if you were to stand in the fourth dimension while a shadow being left the fourth dimension and partly came through to ours, you would see light streaming through from our world, the third dimension, into their world. They act like a portal or a bridge. But when viewed from our perspective, they're black, because like a black hole, they just suck light into it. So when we are looking, we're seeing a third dimensional reality, but there are fourth, fifth, sixth plus dimensions within that or beyond that reality. So it's almost like time is being changed as we see it. So it's perfectly possible for something from the fifth or the sixth dimension to come down the ladder, as I call it. It's very, very difficult to go up the ladder, and the human race is learning that for the seventh time. It is incredibly hard to go up the dimensions. You have to earn it. You know, it's not about a medal. It's just you have to have enough learning and understanding of your own self and of your race and of your people. And once you've achieved that certain level of understanding, you will evolve to the next stage. But if you've already evolved to a higher stage, then it's easy to come down. Not always easy to go back again. So when we are looking from this planet at the stars or the planets, we are seeing a third dimensional representation of what the holograph of the multiverse is. But if you're living on one of those planets in the fifth or sixth dimension, you see yourself and your surroundings in the fifth or the sixth dimension. But they have the technology to view us in the third dimension. We don't have, except a very, very few people, we don't have generally the technology to look into the Pleiades, for instance, and see very, very human-type creatures in the fifth dimension. But they have the technology to look at us in the third dimension. And that's it. It's about increased brain power, but increased technology. And all of these races have been successful because they have married together advanced technologies and a superior brain. Now, the difference with these races is they did not go down the transhuman agenda route. You know, the Palladians, the Nordics, the Andromedians, the Lyrans did not take robotic parts to themselves. They stayed organic, although some of their bodies are more energy bodies than biological, but they didn't take machines to themselves. What's trying to happen on this planet is, on a third dimensional level, they're trying to hoodwink people and say, you need to take a machine, you need to become part robot because it's better. And here's a bit of a precedent for it. Many years ago, perhaps not as many as we would think, start ending in the 1950s, but going back in time to the Victorian times, it was seen as a good idea to have all your teeth pulled out, whether they were rotten or not. So people were having good, healthy teeth pulled out and having them replaced with false teeth, because the thinking was, look, your original teeth are just going to fall out anyway, so you might as well have these, you know, Bakelite or metal teeth or gold teeth to replace them. And that was a fad. It was something that they did. Absolutely abhorrent and terrible now, but it shows that the human concept to immortality, to surviving, is a real great pusher. And there are a number of people in the alternative industry who have turned their back on the truth and have thrown their lot in with a number of unscrupulous showmen who are seeking to spread false information And I've done so because they've been promised immortality. And if they listen to this show, they better watch out because they know that I know. So one of the ways that you can bribe people is saying, we have the elixir of life, the philosopher's stone. And if you want to live for 500 years, then you'll do this and we will give you access to it. And that's a real bribe. And what they do is they don't give it to you. They get you to do what they want and then they just let you die a normal death anyway. So there's a lot going on this planet. It's not just an exciting time. It's a challenging time. It's a good question. Thank you.
Very, very interesting. Thank you for that. From Darla, this is regarding the fake demiurge and so my question is regarding the dark versus the false light, the duality of the demiurge, and whether it is true that the archangels, Ashtar, the supposed ascended martyrs, and other channeled entities are simply the other side of the same coin, and when we call upon them, we are still giving our power to the archons. I read that in order to harvest the largest amount of soul energy possible, they created the dark-like duality paradigm to ensure that every being incarnated would serve as a battery to help keep the demiurge energized. Essentially, the good souls would seek out the false light team, and the bad souls would seek out the dark team. Unknowingly, to most souls, they are all serving the same system. I am curious about your perspective on this. Thank you again with love and gratitude, Darla.
You've done an incredible amount of research, or you've just know because you know. By and large, that is accurate to my thinking. It's not entirely accurate. All I would add is that there are actually good beings, you could call them angels, and there are bad beings, you could call them angels. So all I would say to you is that, yes, there was a movement a very long time ago to create a good cop, bad cop. You know, you're presented with a bad dark angel and you reject that. And then you're presented with what appears to be a good angel. You throw your lot in with that and you find that actually he's working for the same side anyway. But the problem is that there are a number of good angels. And that's why I always say to people, trust yourself. Trust your judgment. There are good angels or beings, whatever you want to call them, who are truthful and they're independent and they want the best. But there are groups that pretend to be good, but they're not. It's no different from all the organizations that set themselves up on this planet, supposedly, you know, giving enlightenment and running cults. But they are actually just fronts for very, very satanic evil organizations behind them. I think that the point that I'm making here is that you with these creatures, but don't ever give them the right over you. Don't ever put yourself in a position where you become their slave or servant, or you willingly or unwillingly give away the right for your freedom. That's really important. You know, I interact with these creatures. And I'm not saying don't interact with them. What I'm saying is be clear in your own mind. Excuse me. Be clear in your own mind where your freedom starts and ends. What you're prepared to talk about and what you're not prepared to talk about. What you're prepared to give and what you're not prepared to give. And as long as you maintain that independence, then you will see whether these things that have come to you are good or bad. Because if they're bad and they realize that you're not going to play their game, they will either disappear or they will try and hurt you. But if they're good beings, they're not interested in controlling or manipulating you. They will still continue to visit you and they will still continue to have a dialogue with you because it is the dialogue that's important to them, not the fact that they can control you. And, you know, even people who consider themselves enlightened on this planet still don't really grasp the depth of deceit, that it's like a roots underground that just go everywhere. You know, if decent, ordinary wonderful, upstanding individuals understood what paedophilia really was in terms of its construction and its control and its organization, they would be shocked to the core. I'm hoping that this information comes out as soon as possible, but I'm making the point that we are presented with something, we don't just believe it. Do not believe what you're presented with. You know, use your discernment, use your judgment, ask your soul, check with your heart. Does this seem right? Should we go with it? And if you're in any doubt, buy time to think, time to look. So it's a really good question. Thank you.
Yes, buy time. It's all right. Maybe not this week. I know where that went wrong once. But anyway, next question, if I can get back to, there we go. Here we are. Right. So now this is a really interesting question. It's about Simon Parks. Okay. So, this is from Jijo. Hello, Simon and listen. I check Simon's website every day for updates. And even though I thought I typed in simonparks.org, it got to Google and type his name in the search bar Of late, I've noticed a small box which appears either below the search results or the side of the window, which is a Wikipedia page about a person named Simon Prakes, who was a sailor in the Navy and who went missing in Gibraltar about 30 years ago. Just wondering if Simon knows about anything about his namesake-ish. Thank you both for your hard work and dedication to humanity. It's definitely Simon Parks. The disappearance of Simon Parks is a Wikipedia entry, it says here.
Well, I suppose if my name was Julius Caesar and we typed that in and went to Wikipedia, there'd be several. There's a house builder in the town I live, and he's got the spelling the same name as me, but we're not related. So, I don't know, you know, could be a long distant member of the family who fell overboard, probably drinking too much rum, and was eaten by sharks or something.
You know how it goes.
You know how it goes. So, I'm not going to say no. All I'll say is that people can share the same name, but not share the same energetic timeline, or the same intent. There are very human reasons why people get the same sort of family name. However, it may possibly. I mean, I have a very strong memory of being in a past life, but with a totally different name that wasn't Parks. You know, that was a completely different name, because when you incarnate in physical bodies, you can physically incarnate in a different family line. So you could incarnate in the family Smith, but your soul is in their body and your memory is there and your genetic connection is there. But from the human point of view, birth certificate, death certificate, credit card, hire purchase agreement, you know, all the money things, your name that you've been given by the system appears. But that may not be the name you resonate with. I mean, the name that I have today is the name that I am known by. And in fact, it's quite interesting because I have a strong connection to Mesopotamia, in Israel, Armenia, and Iran. And my name, which is pronounced Parks in this country, would not be pronounced like that in the Mesopotamia region. My name would be pronounced as Parques. So even within the human language, names can be pronounced differently. I have it anglicized to Park so that, you know, it's acceptable to the society that I'm living in. But if I was living in the Mesopotamia region, it would be Parques. So I don't know. I think it's just fun. Thank you. Good question. I like it.
So, from today's DNA Incarnations, from CC Central Australia, from Hazelnut, indeed, from CC Central Australia. Lyran Society and Lyran Embodiment questions. Dear Simon, dear JP, thank you for your dedicating time and essence into this great work. Please tell us about the Lyran Society, or Lyran Society, and how their embodiment looked like. Thank you, and be safe. So what do they look like? What does a Lyran look like?
Thank you. I always try to be safe. It's something that is important to me. But I don't really worry about it too much. Well, there's a lot of people that think Lyrans are lions. And it's easy to make that connection. There's a number of websites out there that show Lyrans as lions, and that's not my understanding. You know, Lyrans are humans. Lyrans are from the upper third of the sixth dimension. So you go three quarters of the way up from the bottom of the sixth dimension upwards, then you find Lyra. Lyra, the Lyran people generally are very kind, very loving, have a very, very, very strong commitment to the right to life. The point about right and wrong is very important to them. And you know yourself, JP, you've talked about the Lyran trauma. So the point here is that Lyrans are human looking, two arms, two legs, the same number of digits, the same eyes, the same nose, because we are all from that blueprint. It was the destruction of the Lyran home planet and the spreading of humanity that gave rise to the human race across the multiverse that we now know. So everything was designed as a point. Had it not been for that, it's doubtful whether humanity would have made it right across the zone. Height. Lyrans generally not particularly tall. We tend to think of planet aliens to be quite tall. We like them to be 6 foot, don't we, or 7 foot. Then we get a bit worrying. Oh God, we're going over 7 foot. It's a bit dodgy. So we like to be around the 6 foot to 7 foot. We're comfortable with that. Lyrans are not that tall at all. You'll find that the female Lyran is between 5 foot and 5 foot five, 5 foot six. The male Lyran is between 5 foot six and 5 foot 10. It's quite specific, isn't it? Don't know if you'll find that anywhere else. When a Lyran incarnates into a human body, they will have specifically a type of hair. If their hair isn't that color, then the female will dye the hair, stain the hair that color. Their eye color is always the same. Their type of facial features, the physical shape is always identical. But then just as it is if a reptilian soul person incarnates in a human, then, you know, the soul tries to make, within constraints, the physical body follow the blueprint. That's what the young girl said. Oh, they've got the blueprint wrong. One of my toes is missing. So that's the way it is. Very difficult to extrapolate that, because when we look at humans on the Earth, we are looking at a Palladian soul in a human body or a Lyran soul in a human body, and we're looking at a human. But when you're looking at one of these beings from his or her own homeland, who is not incarnated in an Earth human body, here's the key, but is incarnated in a human body, then we see the differences. So we talk about, I said the Lyrans are not lions. And the lion beings or the feline races come from two major places, Orion and Cyrus or Sirius. And they don't look like lions. You know, they don't have a tail. They don't walk around on 4 feet. They look very human, but the flying lions, as they are nicknamed, the ear is about half an inch higher on the head than a human. So if you imagine your own head and you put your finger now on your ear and you move it up a couple of centimeters or half an inch, that's how these feline species ears are set like that. And then they all part their hair in the middle. Now to a human observer, they look very odd because their ears are much higher on their head and they have their hair parted like a lion's mane. So all these creatures did when they came to Earth was they saw the connection and they went into the viewer's mind and projected a cat face, a lion face. And that made the person much more calmer to be around these beings because, you know, in Egypt, in Africa, they were familiar with lions. They knew what lions were. So when these creatures came and appeared to have a lion's face, and far from running away, as we would probably scream and shout if a lion came at us, they were much more confident with it. But they worked on what they had, which was their ears were higher on their head. So every species that's humanoid has a human features, but there are certain differences. There aren't a human group that look like North American Indians. You know, there are beings that are part human and part something else. And it's fascinating and it's exciting, but for many people it's terrifying because, you know, it's about the way we're educated on this planet. We're not taught about it. And so because we're not taught about it, we don't question it. We don't debate it. We don't accept it. So only those people that have seen the truth through one means or another that actually begin to understand. And then we're faced with it. And I hope everyone's going to be faced with it very soon because we need to get on. They won't run away screaming. They'll want to go into a dialogue. But remember, always check what's come to you. Is it of good intent? And if it's not of good intent, walk away from it. Push it away. Get rid of it. Because the next thing that might come to you might be of good intent. So that's another good question. Thanks, Jake.
So, final question, I think. Extraterrestrial entertainment from Lauren Wagner. I was wondering what you know about mantid and reptilian music or art. Do they place any importance on these, or are they focused on nothing but creating reality? Was entertainment on this planet created for the sole purpose of distraction and manipulation? I'm just curious on how, say, a reptilian would unwind after a longer day of enslaving less evolved races. Thank you, Simon and JP.
Well, okay, I am going to refrain from making the joke about perhaps they listen to Wagner's Ring Cycle. That would be a very funny joke, wouldn't it? Lord of the Rings, and you know, your name is Wagner, so that was the joke for anybody who didn't quite pick that up. Right, it's an interesting question, and I'm going to give you a response which I hope is as equally good as the questioner. There are some races that have no concept of the value of music. I'm being specific. Reptilians know what music is, but there's no value to it for them. The only value to them would be the resonance for opening portals, moving solid objects. Okay, so it's not, to them, the sound isn't important as a method to relax to. It is as a tool to do things with. You know, Jericho, the walls of Jericho were brought down, was it when the Israelites walked around and blew all their trumpets? What that's telling you is that sound waves were used to shatter the walls. The mantids, however, do have music. Thank goodness. Most human groups actually do. It is not a control system in itself. It is an expression of creation. Humans can create, thank goodness. And so music is something like art or poetry or literature that humans can do and then can create, and they get beauty out of it and others can get beauty out of it. You know, you can look at a painting and think, well, that's just nonsense. And the next person comes along and says, that's the best thing I've ever seen. That's not a weakness, that's a strength. Because that individual choice, that individual idea is what humanity is all about. Individualism, but hopefully working cooperatively. So if it's human, it will have music. The way it relaxes is different from the way humans relax. Music is seen as educational off this planet. That's an important concept. And also it's seen as a meditation device. It's not seen really by the vast majority of people as a meditative medium. But that is the way it's seen off planet. Music also has a value, and people will create music together. And I don't mean getting into a room and and creating music. What these off-planet humans can do is they can be in different locations and telepathically they can create elements of music and they can share it. So not writing it down on a piece of paper or writing on a computer, they are telepathically sharing and they can hear the sounds in their head. I'm sure some people on this planet can do that. So they can, but they'll hear the sounds and they'll create that and put that together. And there are a number of human societies that have like the equivalent of a university where this music is made and stored. You'll find that the less human a creature is, the less it understands the concept of any of those artistic creations. The mantis originated from planet Earth. And because of that, they are welcomed by the Earth and they do have, I'd use the word loosely, they have human traits. Mantis have, or mantids, I should use the English term, mantids have a sense of humor. Mantids have the ability to create. But that is because they came from the Earth, not because they're human. Something that comes from another place that's not human, like a reptilian, is incapable. And that's so sad. Is incapable of creation. What reptilians do is copy brilliantly, but they copy, but they can't create. So that's a good question to end on, to celebrate being human. To be human is wonderful. We are so, so lucky. And even people who call themselves spiritual don't really understand what it means to be human. This is wonderful. It's a fantastic opportunity. Every day of our lives, we should live it to the full and we should rejoice because there are so many creatures out there. Envy is not really a good point, but they would like to be as we are and they can't be because they don't have the DNA connections. They don't have what we have. It's what makes us so special. And it is so sad for me to see people who could be so wonderful and creational, being so negative and so inward looking, you know, someone who just sits at a table making money when they could be out doing some beautiful things. Anyway, it's lovely to be back on the radio show without a cold, and to connect with all the wonderful listeners and all those that will obviously listen to this on YouTube. Thank you, JP, for making this possible. And God bless to you.